You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Bernice Lerner on the show with me today. She has an amazing new book, and it's called All the Horrors of War. And I'll tell you what, this is a book that you have to have on your bookshelf. It's not even negotiable. Welcome to the show, Bernice.
Thank you so much, Hank.
I'm excited to have you on the show with me today. But before we get into all the great stuff we're going to talk about, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
My first memory is probably in second grade or third, who knows? I mean, really, really early. I was always loved writing. I think I was probably one of these kids who learned to hold a pencil early and loved to draw and loved to write and love to make up stories. And yeah, and I found all through school the writing what came kind of easily for me, not necessarily great writing, but it's just an act I loved. I journaled a lot when I was in high school and college, and yeah, it was just something I enjoyed doing.
Were you a bookish kid? Did you read a lot?
No, I didn't read a lot. I didn't read a lot, but I read whatever was in front of me, which could have been the back of a cereal box. And I copied down the words of whatever I was, if I had a pen in my hand and a newspaper, I would just copy, write, physically write. And yeah, but I wasn't terribly bookish. I did do strange things. I mean, I had a harder time getting into fiction stories as a kid, but, as soon as I could really read, maybe in later elementary school, I would just pull down the World Book Encyclopedia on my shelf and just thumb through and just read entries, things like that.
I was kind of that way too. I would get curious about things and I would obsess over little minute details about things. It's funny.
Yeah.
Bernice, you have a doctor before your name. What did you study in school, and what was your path through college?
So in college, I have a bachelor's degree in community and school health education. I was very interested in health. I still am. And then I decided I wanted to study the Holocaust. And my parents are survivors, and my whole family, all the adults in my family. And I wanted to get deeper knowledge. So I went, there was no programs in that at all. And once in college, there was one course called Anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, and the Jew Today. And that was kind of like a broad sweeping class that didn't go into depth. And there was really no programs at the time, but I wound up going to the Jewish Theological Seminary and studying a lot of Bible and Talmud and not so much Jewish history. But yeah, I did that. And then later in life, when I was in my like mid to late 30s, I started a doctoral program at Boston University, and that was in educational administration. At the time, I was an educational administrator at a college, and so I was doing that part-time. And when it came time to choose a topic for a dissertation, I really wanted something that would hold my attention and that I'd be so interested in, and I met with professors, and I finally met with the dean of the School of Education at that time, Ed DeLatra, and he convinced me that I had to write something related to my family background on the Holocaust. So I did my dissertation on 7 Holocaust survivors who became professors in their post-war lives. So it tied into education, and it's relevant today to people who have to miss school, because those people missed the years of school and went on to earn advanced degrees. So I did that dissertation and learned a lot more about the Holocaust in different places in Europe and through telling through the stories of these protagonists' lives. And yeah, so it's funny because I have a degree in educational administration, but I became a dean of adult learning at Hebrew College, which is where I worked for most of the time I was working on the book. But yeah, studying about the Holocaust, I did on my own.
Was there a common thread that you identified between these Holocaust survivors and people that went on to get advanced degrees? Was there something that just stood out that connected these people, other than their shared experience, of course?
Yeah, they were all very altruistic, and they were really caring about their students and very, very good, decent human beings and very moral, and made choices that reflected that and their attitude. Yeah, that was the connecting factor, that they had made this choice that they were going to contribute to our world in positive ways after having seen such terrible things. And they were fascinating to me because they were nothing like the survivors I knew. They weren't like anyone in my family. Not that my family wasn't also good and decent people and kind and altruistic, but nobody from my family had really gone to college. Most of them, my father maybe finished elementary school. My mother did a high school equivalency, and most of my relatives did not have any kind of formal education. They were all in business. So yeah, it was a real departure for me to write about my mother. It was a different kind of a Holocaust survivor story and more personal.
Bernice, I've met several people who endured the tragedy of the Holocaust, and then also had some family members who fought in that war, and you get varied reactions from the survivors of that time. Some people share openly the stories of that, and some people don't want to talk about it at all. It's already happened. We're moving forward, and I don't want to go back there. With so many people in your family who were survivors of the Holocaust, was that something that you guys talked about? Was it something that your elders shared with you? What was the climate like in where you grew up?
So you're right in that it varies by individual, but Yeah, so my parents were, they had gotten married 10 years after the war, so they had a lot of their nightmares and done some healing of themselves personally in that interim before they had children. So they were very busy when I was growing up rebuilding their lives, making a life for themselves, working at their business and being part of their synagogue community. And it wasn't a focus, but late at night, sometimes I would try to sit down with my mom. My dad went to bed early, and she would tell me stories. And it started when I was young and was trying to delay bedtime. She would tell me stories about her childhood. She had a childhood in Romania. She had her post-war years in Sig and Sweden. So she came from these two places that were very different from Long Island, New York, where I was growing up. And she had a lot of stories to tell me. And they weren't sad. She told me sort of her adventures as a young person. And only when I was a teenager did she start to open up and tell me about what she had gone through when she was a teenager. So we would have these late night conversations in the laundry room. She'd be ironing and we'd be talking. And this was before the term Holocaust was out there. And it was, she would just tell me what happened to her, to my grandparents, and what she observed and what she saw. And she was really wonderful about being able to tell me and any making me feel like I could ask anything, anytime. And it was a little different with my father. He was maybe more sensitive in his constitution, but he would also, I could ask him anything, and I regret not asking him more. But he told me stories too. So it was really good because I could approach it without terrible fear of, bringing up the subject.
Do you remember how young you were when you first started understanding what it was that happened to your parents?
Maybe I was around the age my mother was. Like, she was 14 when she was deported to Auschwitz. And I think at age 13 or 14, 15, that's when we talked about a lot about Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen. I remember the moment that she told me about Bergen-Belsen, what it was really like there. And I remember it very clearly. We were in the basement and she put down the iron. And she demonstrated for me how she who was 50, she said she was 50% dead. And she leaned over and she stretched out her arms behind her. And she said, "And this is how I dragged people who were 90% dead to the mass graves." And so she was explaining to me the unexplainable. She said it was indescribable. No one could picture it. No one could imagine it. No film could show it. No picture could show it. But there were skeletons. You could count the ribs. You could count their ribs. You could count their teeth and their jaws, and just how awful it was. And she started to tell me some of the details. And when I later did research, I could build around her story. I could get the greater context of what was happening then and there. I could never picture it. I didn't see it with my own eyes, but I understood what the Nazis were trying to do by pressing the starved and emaciated and parched slave laborers into service to clean up the camp of corpses before the British arrived. So I write all about all that in the book, but her stories, it was always corroborated later by other survivor testimonies, by scholarly works, whatever I could find written. It all kind of came together and made sense. Her journey and then the liberator's journey.
When you start absorbing and processing a story like that, and start putting real life consequences to that, and then seeing your family, who lovingly raised you and went on to have hopes and dreams and everything that humans do. You mentioned earlier the altruism of the people that you met, the survivors. How does that affect you as a person, to see the horrors? I mean, literal horrors that that these people and your family members went through, but then to see that they still have hope and can have a sense of altruism, how does that affect a young person and mold you and shape you?
Well, it affects you differently depending on the developmental stage that you're at in your own life, right? So when I was a teenager, hearing about my mother as a teenager, she was a girl victor over Hitler. She had done certain things strategically to try to survive, and it's kind of inspirational, and she was courageous. And yeah, I thought she was, and just the way she acted in her life as I knew her as a mother, she was incredibly resourceful and able and could do so many things. So I was impressed by my mother. And then when I became a mother, I started to think about my grandmother, her mother, who went into the gas chambers with her little ones, and I was devastated, and I couldn't go there because it was so painful to think about not being able to protect my children. Can you imagine? You're a parent and you can't do anything, and you can't do anything to protect your children. And it's just beyond, anything I could imagine. And just, I could cry every minute thinking about that. And then when I became a grandmother, I thought about my mother's grandmother who's her daughter, her son, her son-in-law, her daughter-in-law, and their five little children were massacred in the first massacre of the Holocaust. And the thought of losing my loved ones, my cherished ones, the adorable grandchildren, is just also just so terrible. And yeah, so when you really try to identify and put yourself in the shoes of people who are in particular situations, it can be really difficult. But yeah, and I try to, sometimes it's very devastating, but you don't live your life in that devastating place. You, when you're writing the book, you almost live two lives. I was living at least two lives, because I wrote a dual biography. So I was trying to put myself in the head of the liberator, which was really hard to do. That was a big stretch because I didn't know him personally. I had to just go by what people told me and what I read about him and what he wrote, and trying to think about what was on his mind, what was the kind of things he was thinking about, how was he affected by this experience. And I was writing about my mother, whose story I had more intimate knowledge of. And then I was living my own life on the side, like I was living like separate lives, and things were going on in my life. So, a lot of happy things. My daughter got married, my son got married, had grandchildren. So, and I had a full-time job for a lot of the time I was working on this. So it was a very busy time, but I always carried the story, the book with me. Like, no matter what I was doing, it was always there. It was there in the background or in the forefront. But I always, as a writer, I think you're always thinking about it someplace. You could be making these connections between things you're seeing and reading, and the synapses in your brain are going off, and you have these aha moments, and you jot things down, and you write drafts, and you rewrite, and you go back to sources, and it's like this never-ending thing. You just want to learn more and more and tell the story in the best way you can, that makes it accessible to the reader and doesn't overload the reader, because you also go down these primrose paths and tangents that take you all kinds of other places. So you learn a lot. You're learning all the time.
The subtitle of the book, Bernice, is A Jewish Girl, A British Doctor, and the Liberation of Bergen-Belsen. Who is the British doctor, and why did you choose to tell this story from this perspective?
So the British doctor is Brigadier Glyn Hugh Llewellyn Glyn Hughes, and I actually started the whole project by him, by thinking of him. And it came out of the question of how did my mother survive? Because had the British Army come just a few days later, I wouldn't be here. She wouldn't be here. She was so deathly ill, and she had fallen unconscious And that was the part of the story she couldn't tell me. How did she get from the dung-infested, diseased hut, overcrowded hut, how did she get from point A to a makeshift hospital, point B? And I started to research the liberation, and the man most prominently associated with it was Glenn Hughes. So who was he? And was he biography worthy? And I started to explore that. And it turns out he was this sort of like, not exactly, but kind of like an Oscar Schindler type figure who the world didn't know about. And I thought he was really empathetic. The survivors named the hospital there, the Glenn Hughes Hospital. 2,000 babies were born post-war in the Glenn Hughes Hospital. I just thought he's a compelling character. And I decided to bring him into Bold Relief. So I started out by writing his biography. And so people were interested in not only his story, but people kept asking me, well, what about your mother? What about your mother? And then I thought, well, could I write a dual biography? How would I tell both their stories in one book? And from there, it evolved. And I tell both of their stories over just 1 year, the last year of the war. And yeah, over five seasons, spring of 1944 to spring of 1945.
What an incredible job. When I'm looking at this book, in the rear, there are so many notes. I mean, the footnotes, it's incredible, the research that went into this book. And I'm telling you what, the notes section, the book is worth its price just for the notes section, because you really, every mention in this book is backed up. How did you begin the research process and to dig through, the family history, and then to, you know, tie it to historical events, and then to bring out other nuances? How do you begin to tackle a subject like this?
I began by, I was advised to look in Who's Who. It is a crazy story. So you look in the UK's Who's Who, and then you see all the organizations that Glenn Hughes was ever a part of, and you write to all of them, and you have no idea how to find any. You learn from his obituaries that he had two daughters and a son. You have no idea if they're alive or how you might reach them. The daughters have different names now, and you think in all the UK phone books, how are you going to find these people? And, you know, just you write to these organizations and you get lucky. The school that he went to, his daughter had just visited to deliver his Founders Day books. So they put me in touch, and you have this chain of things that links, and then you go to London and you meet, you know, you meet the people and you go into the archives, and one source leads you to the next. And spent time everywhere, the Imperial War Museum, the Wellcome Medical Library, the Royal Army Medical Corps Museum, the National Archives, visiting his rugby friends who were still alive when I began the process, and visiting, spending time with his daughter. So it was kind of a crazy journey. Like, who was I to write this Brigadier story? But people were very welcoming and very open and very willing to meet with me and talk to me. And I talked to whoever of the survivors was around who knew Glenn Hughes. I spoke to the rabbi, the chaplain in Bergen-Belsen. I interviewed him on the phone. And yeah, so I had some good leads and people who said things that made me feel like, okay, he is worth really learning about. So, and that's, and the problem is, so it's like detective work, and you start the journey, but you don't know quite where to end it, because everything takes you to something else. I mean, I went to the University College Hospital medical, the records, the transcript, and I got all his grades while he was in medical school, which was, there were a lot of surprises in there, and all the magazines and medical school where he was written up as a rugby football player. But you become fascinated, and it becomes like the process of discovering things is very exciting. And of course, reading whatever books I could that shed light on some of my mother's experiences and journeys. I just, And it's never ending. I could keep going. I mean, I'm always interested in learning more. It's like the project had to stop at some point, but and you can only include so much in the book. I mean,
Right.
so.
Yeah. Bernice, this is the only book that I know of that pairs the narrative of a Holocaust survivor with a liberator. How important was it to you to weave these stories together, and why do you think this book stands out from all of the other histories the way that it does?
I think it gives two points of view, very different points of view, very different vantage points. I wanted to know what it was like for Glenn Hughes, who had responsibility for trying to save as many lives as possible in this unbelievable situation, and also what was happening on the ground that was kind of shocking, even after the liberation, with and to my mother. So it gives like a really a broader perspective, and these characters are each display courage and in their own ways, and they represent the groups behind them in a way. It's hard to just envision like inmates or liberators. It's so abstract, but this gives some a concrete view into what those experiences of surviving and liberating might have been like for other people as well. And it was important for me to weave these stories together because I wanted to give this like these two entry points into understanding the events. I wanted to lift Glenn Hughes into bold relief. He was a compelling character. I also wanted to commemorate some of the family members, my mother's parents and her aunts and uncles, who have vanished from the earth. There's no trace of them having existed except for what I could write about them in my book. There's no record of them or how they were killed or how they died. So I gave some color to, lift some of these characters from the masses, from the 6 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust. I was able to rescue a few of them from oblivion and tell their stories. And it was a gamble to tell two stories like this in one book because it's not something publishers are used to publishing. It's not, there was voices along the way that didn't think it could work, but I was very fortunate to work with an editor at Johns Hopkins University Press who really encouraged me to tell both stories over 1 year's time. So it came together in that way.
Well, and it comes together in a way that really does put a face to these stories that we hear, a face and a voice to these stories. And when an author is able to do that, then the reading public, I think it enables us to develop empathy in a way that we wouldn't have before, when we can personally connect with a story the way that you've allowed us to through this book. A magnificent book. I'm recommending it to everyone. It's such a great read, such an engrossing read. Bernice, if people are just learning about you, is there a place where they can find you online and connect with all the great stuff that you do?
Yeah, I have a website, www.bernicelearner.com. So, yeah, they could learn about me there.
Excellent. We'll put
I also
link.
have lots of pictures of my mother and Glenn Hughes on there.
Well, that's another thing. The book is full of pictures, and it's such a it, this is a book that you'll go back to over and over again. I know. And yes, your website has lots of other background details, and it's a treasure trove as well. We'll put links to your website in the show notes of this episode, as well as where people can buy the book. It's available everywhere now. And thank you so much for joining me today, Bernice.
Thank you so much, Hank. Thank you.
authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new, easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web.